It's a test.
Yeah. It's, you know what it is? It's an intermittent fasting test. Sino ko an invented intermittent fasting?
They're beautiful, yeah, but they're also masipag. We're an agricultural society. We need hardworking, masipag, yeah. Hardworking, beautiful daughter.
If I'm gonna kulit you, I'm gonna go like, hey, ice, hey.
It's a story of what happens when feuding gods collide.
Ultimate enemies to lovers. Ultimate enemy. We did it first.
It would be great if you could help leave us a review.
Or a rating. 5 stars.
Yeah.
Or four and a half stars.
There's no 4.5. Eh. 5 na
lang. Oh, 5 na
lang. Let's round it up. Gods Must Be Crazy.
I'm Anima.
And I'm Ice. And we're recording together again the first time in forever.
Happy New Year.
Is what it seems. Happy New Year. And we hope you get rich.
So we hope you get rich as well.
We're recording right after Chinese New Year.
It is still Chinese New Year.
Okay.
Because it's 14 days after Chinese New Year. So this
It's a long weekend. Still, we had an extra day, so we were like, we need to record because we don't have any more episodes in the
No more pipeline, too many like vacations.
Yeah. As you guys know, we kind of took a break for a bit, just taking it easy, but we're back. We have a lot of episodes that we're very excited.
Lots of stories,
lots of topics we're very excited to talk about. And today, I didn't tell Anna what we're covering, but we're covering a topic that is very near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of intimidated to talk about it because there's a lot that I personally don't really know.
It's really loaded, no? About sometimes. It. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think when it's a subject that's a bit closer to you, there's a lot more pressure because you feel like you have to get it right. Mm-hmm. Versus, let's say, stuff that we don't really know about. So we're
Everything is new. Everything
this
source
said that. This source said that. Who knows? So I actually wanted to bring us back to our roots, which is the gods would be crazy, which is talking about gods.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like this story I heard once about gods who were fighting.
Okay.
So what happens when gods fight?
Okay.
And I didn't realize that it was linked to a particular place that I really like and a particular area in the Philippines that is very close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Is it Pinatubo?
Yes, okay. But it's also the legend of Mount Arayat,
ooh,
which is in Pampanga. And what happens when gods get angry and
I'm
fight?
Excited. I'm excited.
So probably the title of this episode is going to be The Gods Must Be Fighting. So today, Anna, we're going to talk about the legend of Mount Arayat. And that...
I have no idea.
I've realized it's a natural segue into... the Kapampangan mythology.
Yay!
And the Kapampangan pantheon of gods.
Okay, great.
And everyone's been requesting for us to do like, you know, the pantheon of gods. Mm-hmm. And if you first get into Philippine mythology, everyone always asks like, who are the gods? Like, how are they related? Because
yeah,
I guess, you know, popular mythologies that we know, like Greek mythology, Norse mythology, etc. There's always... at least some obvious hierarchy or pantheon that has been formed or agreed upon throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not as familiar about the equivalent in Philippine mythology, especially because we have very many different religions and pantheons in the island. So today we'll focus on Kapampangan mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk a little bit about Pampanga, where it is. There's a lot more that could be said about its role in history and all of that, but... that would end up making this another 3-part episode.
You say that so, like it's a bad thing that we did a 3-part.
No, by the way, thanks for all the love that you guys have shared in a lot of our 2-parters and 3-parters. We delved deep into a lot of topics we loved last year. So I think we did a very deep probe into the Binokot and its role in culture, in our mm-hmm. epics. And we also went into like a whole 3-part series on the Babaylan.
Mm-hmm.
There is another follow-up to the Babaylan episode, but we're not recording that just yet. We're going to give you a break from the Babaylan content for a little bit so that we can talk about other stuff. So today yes. we're going to talk about Mampangan mythology. So first, before we start, I want to talk to you about Mount Arayat.
Okay.
You don't know.
I've never been.
You've never been, right?
Yeah, so, but it became sort of trendy. Like after I left, after I left the Philippines 10 years ago, not right after, but a lot of folks from our, from the company that we used to work at, would go on field trips to Mount Arayat.
Mountaineers love.
Yeah, yeah. But like even, area. I would say like even beginners would go and then they would get because altitude sickness.
Oh.
No, no, they would like.
But why?
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
That's
okay.
something we should
but
talk
it became
about.
Popular. I've never been. I would love to go. I okay. heard it's beautiful. Okay. Yes.
I will show you a picture of Mount Arayat. Yay. So you have. So I have visual aid. So for those of you who are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we also do upload our episodes on YouTube. So if you want to see the visual aids, feel free to join us.
We'll insert the picture here.
If not, then Google it. Tough luck. Okay, this is okay. Mount Arayat.
Ooh.
And I remember, so let's for the, is there.
Pretty.
It's a very nice summit. Mm-hmm. There's another picture here. So this is so, like, this for me is so iconic because as a kid, I grew up in Bacolor, Pampanga.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there was a, you know, Pinatubo erupted in 1991, which was like, I think 2 years after I was born. There was a lahar that happened. And the lahar is basically what happens when
rainwater.
Yeah, rainwater mixes with acid, ash and all of that. And so there's a mud kind of sludge, a flood of mud that covers the entire region. And
but it solidifies. It's yeah. not just like mud, sludgy. It becomes like very, very hard.
No.
Oh.
No, it doesn't.
But then how did the houses get buried?
It doesn't dry up. That's the problem.
Oh,
so
no.
So it's a very thick sludge.
Like quicksand.
Yeah, and it's... It covered the entire region. It leveled a lot of houses. We'll get a bit into Pinatubo actually later.
Okay.
But what ended up happening was, I remember as a kid growing up, and there were not that many houses left in Bacolor because yeah. a lot of people relocated.
You drive through, and then all you saw were like tops of houses.
Yeah, so a lot yeah. of people relocated to San Fernando.
Yeah.
They, you know, there was a resettlement there, mm-hmm. And that's where people ended up staying. But what that meant was basically our house got elevated and elevated to avoid the floods.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so high that you could literally see off the top of the remaining houses, a very clear view. Oh. It was almost like if you sit in the balcony, you were literally looking at
straight
just
at Mount Arayat.
Mount Arayat. And it was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And my aunt told me a story about the origin of Mount Arayat, which I didn't find anywhere, so I don't know if she invented it. But at first, I thought it was a story of these star-crossed lovers.
Ooh.
So if you look at the summit of Mount Arayat,
yes.
it kind of looks like, so from here, it kind of looks like there are two people.
Yes, embracing.
Like, lying, like, opposite ends.
Yes.
And the idea was there were these star-crossed lovers called Ara and Ayat or something like that. They wanted to be married, but the parents didn't agree, so they eloped. And then the parents, I guess the dad or something was powerful, and they caught him, and then he turned them into the mountain. So this is a story of star-crossed lovers. That was a story
okay.
that I was told. I could not find that. I tried to
she
look
made it up.
For that. So my Tita Annie, you invented that story.
Hey, it's folklore, man. That's
yes, oral tradition.
All the stories are made up.
So, here's what I found, and there are so many varied accounts of the origin of Mount Arayat. So the first legend says that once upon a time, Mount Arayat was not where it actually was now. Because the weird thing about Mount Arayat, so think about the topography. For those of you who are not familiar, Pampanga is in the central Luzon region. So if you think of the whole Luzon area, before you go to like northern Luzon, which is Ilocos, Bigan region, etc., you have the Central Plains, and they're called the Rice Bowl of the Philippines.
Yes.
Because for the longest time, a lot of the rice produce in the Philippines mainly came from the Central Luzon region.
It's very flat.
Now, there's an area called Zambales, and there's a mountain range in Zambales. Zambales is, I think, northwest of Pampanga. And in the mountain range, I think there's a whole series of mountains, and then I think Mount Pinatubo is right at the edge of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Pinatubo is the volcano that erupted in 1991. The weird thing about Mount Arayat is it's like it's near but not near. It's like right in the middle of the plain.
Oh.
So people said...
Was it a volcano before?
So yes, it is an inactive volcano. So it's been inactive for 500,000 years.
Wow.
So they said that Mount Arayat... So there's this one old legend that said Mount Arayat used to be part of the Zambales Range, but... The giant who lived in Mount Arayat was just so annoying.
Oh no, they kicked
the
him
rest
out.
Of the giants mountains. In the Zambales range kicked him out.
Oh no.
And so he moved his location.
He's
so
noisy.
That's one of the legends that they say. Mm. But this other legend says that it was actually located near the present town of what we call Candaba.
Okay.
In Pampanga.
Yes.
And one day there were a few giants who were kind of like showing their skills. And then the strongest giant of them all said, I will show you how strong I actually am.
Mm-hmm.
He lifted the entire mountain of Mount Arayat. He got the mountain, pulled it by its foundation, and then moved it to the town of Arayat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they say Candaba became a swamp.
Oh, because that's where he used to come
there
from.
There was a depression
left. A divot.
From where the mountain...
used okay. to live.
And I'm like, that's okay. so sad.
You know what it is? Mm. People looked at the map.
Yeah.
A topography map. And they were like, look at this hole. It looks like this thing used to fit in it. So that's...
Yeah. They were like, maybe this used to be part of this range and whatever. Yeah, so...
That's, science.
That's a... Yeah, you know, we are famous for our geology and... Okay. So that's one of the versions of the story.
I like having a video and looking at Ice's beautiful painting right here.
So I'm going to tell you, it's a mishmash of everything I said.
That's okay.
And, okay, there's another version. So before we get to the gods, I'll just tell you the version with the giants. So once the mountain moved to its new location, the strong giant decided to live there.
What's his name?
He doesn't have a name yet. It actually is not important in this version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then, remember, the mountain came from Candaba. He moved it to... the correct. Present location,
yes.
right? Now, he pa niya kilala yung Zambales giants.
At this oh,
time.
Okay,
yes,
okay.
Different
okay.
version, right?
Okay, okay.
So, the giants in the Zambales range saw him and they were like, hey, you're too near our territory. Like, what are you
Ooh.
Doing here? He ended up having a feud with the giants in the Zambales range.
Mm-hmm.
In this story, his name is, I think, Kargen Kargon.
Kargen Kargon.
Kargen, or if you have to say it in the Filipino Kapampanga way, Kargen Kargon.
Kargen Kargon.
And then he started hurling rocks at the home of the Zambales giants. And he hit them along many different places. And that's why they say the Zambales mountain range is very jagged.
Ah.
The crookedness of the mountain range.
Okay, okay.
And then the Zambales giant hit only two rocks at Arayat, but they hit too hard, so they knocked off the summit of the mountain.
That's why it's a little toppy.
Yeah, because... according to the legend, before it was a perfect cone shape like Mount
Mayon.
So that's
not
because
he's
said.
A little flat on the top.
Yeah. So that's why the top of the Mount Arayat is flat and irregular, right? Now, they said that after many years, the giants of Mount Arayat died and an old enchanter named Sinukuan came to live near the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
His home was a great white rock.
Mm-hmm.
That was bigger than a church.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived for hundreds of years there. And even to this day, if you're driving near the mountain, you can see like a white spot. And it's like, you know, the patches in the horse's foreheads or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like that. You can see it. So I'll show Ooh. You another picture, another visual aid. This is what it looks like.
Oh.
So this is they call it the Enchanted White Rock. And if you're a hiker.
Is that on the top of Mount?
It's on the top.
Okay.
It's on the side of the mountain near the summit.
Ooh.
So a lot of people, when they hike to Arayat, they look for that. Now, they said that he lived there for hundreds of years, and it's on the west side, and so you can see it from far away, and it's called the White Stone. And they said that Sinukuan the sorcerer lived there with his three daughters, and they interacted with the townsfolk. And this is where you get a bit into the Encanto type stories related to the place. So they say that he used to go out and visit the villages. His daughters were all named Maria. And in some versions of the legend, one of his daughters is Maria Makiling.
Okay.
In some versions. But there's a more interesting story about Makiling and Sinukuan, which I'll talk about later on. All of them had beautiful hair, and they were very industrious, very masipag. Even though
I like that masipag is, like, I know, is the quality. They're like not like
a... They're beautiful, yeah, but they're also masipag. So they're not just
like
beautiful.
I like it. But it's not like, I mean, you know, if it's a Disney princess, yeah, or like, they're beautiful, they sing well.
Yeah.
They
We're an agricultural society. We need hardworking, beautiful daughters.
Wait, can I just have the sidebar?
What?
You know, like when you have a friend and you find out that the new friend has a boyfriend. And you're like, oh, si ganyan, ganyan. Oh, si ganyan. Let's play it out. Okay. Like, this is the scenario.
Okay.
Oh, si ganyan may bagong boyfriend.
Pogi ba siya? Is he handsome?
Matangkat. He's tall.
Mabait siya.
Masipag.
Mayaman. So, and there used to be a hierarchy, right? So, the handsome is the highest hierarchy. And then, the next best thing would be mayaman.
Which is
so
rich.
So materialistic. And then, the next would be mabait. And then, it would be
matangkad. Tall.
And then, it would be masipag.
Masipag. Hard worker. Mabait sa nanay.
I love how... Sorry. Is matangkad higher than masipag?
I think so. For me, matangkad is more important than masipag.
Anong gagawin mo sa tangkad niya?
Improvement of the species.
That's really mean to short people.
I'm sorry. I'm short. You're short. Our partners are very tall men.
Partners are very tall. They were beautiful. They were masipag.
Masipag.
It was called off because even though their father was so rich and he commanded all of the trees and
was
the
he immortal?
Animals in the forest. He's a sorcerer.
A sorcerer. Okay. Yeah. He's not a god.
In this story, he's not.
Okay.
They would go to the neighboring towns and sell produce from their realm. So sometimes they would...
Magic fruits?
So sometimes they would play tricks on lowlanders.
Of course.
So apparently one time they came to poor... Like, they would visit poor people's houses and they would try to sell darak, which is a rice brand or palay husk.
Okay.
Husk of rice. In exchange for rice or corn, etc. So usually they'd get turned away, but they, you know, they won't get mad.
What is it for? Is it like fuel? Like biofuel?
Yeah, sometimes.
Because in our plant in Vietnam, in the company that I now work for, the farmer, it's like in a rice bowl, and the farmers from the neighboring village would bring the rice husk to the plant, and they use it as biofuel.
It also is used sometimes as feed for eggs. And
okay.
Yeah, so that up. So people, they would typically get refused. But some people got curious. They were like, why are these beautiful ladies, like, randomly selling, you know, kind of a useless thing?
Yeah.
So one of them, a few of them kind of bought it in exchange for some valuables.
Yeah.
And then the all Marias, right? So the three Marias left. And then in the morning, they went to look at the rice husk and then it turned to gold.
It's not a bad prank. It's a nice prank.
Yeah, they're just like, you know, you were nice to me. It's a typical
old woman by the side of the road. Exactly. And then like, you know,
would you share
my
your
cookie
food
with me? Yeah.
So
I like that this is such a common trope.
I know, we're like so used to it. Now, some people have actually reported being inside Sinukuan's house in the White Stone.
Ooh.
So a lot of times in the olden days, they said that Sinukuan actually kept the door open and anyone could come in. Ooh. But no one wanted to go because scary, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Encanto yan, huwag tayo pupunta dyan.
Yeah.
So what they did was, usually they favored people who were a bit more like simpleng tao, simple-minded people. Like
simple or like simple, like simple-minded.
It's said simple-minded, like you don't like overthink things.
Okay, okay.
You know, naive people. You don't doubt people, like you know the people who
guileless people.
Yeah, guileless people, exactly. Yeah. So if they like a particular person, like oh he looks like he's nice or whatever, they would, if he wanders near the foot of the mountain, they would put up like blocks or impediments to his path, so that he would get lost and he would end up going all the way to the white stone house.
Oh.
And when he would arrive there, what would happen? He would come inside, all the walls are gold, all the furniture is gold. They would have him sit, have dinner with us, the typical Filipino habit of kain, join us.
Yeah.
They would serve food on golden platters and stuff.
But
like
is it
that.
Like Encanto, like you shouldn't eat?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
okay.
If you ate the food, then you would be trapped there forever. If you refuse, and you kept refusing, and like you waste away, you'd go hungry rather than get something. Mm-hmm. They'd feel sorry for you. They'd send you back with treasures and stuff like that.
Okay.
So those are the
it's
reported.
A test. Yeah. It's, you know what it is? It's an intermittent fasting test. Sinukuan invented intermittent fasting. Can you go 18 hours? Okay. 24 hours.
I once went 24 hours on a fast. It's not too bad. But I
no water?
No water.
Okay.
But
okay,
no
okay.
food. But
for
I,
what?
I wouldn't suggest, just to like cleanse. Hmm. But I wouldn't suggest doing it if you've never done the 16-hour fast. I would suggest doing the 16-hour for a few weeks before going to. This isn't a
fasting podcast.
This isn't a a workout slash wellness podcast. Anyway, moving on. So this is a story,
okay.
Right? And I guess apart from the other stories that I'm going to talk about now, that's like the common folk belief. And even though they said that there are no more sightings of Sinukuan, whatever, people still are, they still treat it as a sacred place. So woodcutters don't go near the area. No one points at animals or beasts or insects even in the area for fear of incurring Sinukuan's wrath.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was actually, it's not just a story of giants and sorcerers. It's actually the story of a very important god in Kapampangan mythology. And it's a story of what happens when feuding gods collide. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the stories of gods in Kapampangan mythology.
Okay.
That predates the whole mountain range. Because there are stories that are in typical... Yes?
More than 500,000 years ago stories?
It's kind of like... how do I explain this? So, Pampanga as a region before... So, before Pampanga as we know it today was created or defined, the boundaries of it, the Kapampangan people pretty much lived... pretty much comprised a large part of the Luzon territories.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the indigenous people, Aitas of northern Luzon. Obviously, that's a different set of peoples. But it was pretty much the Tagalogs and the Kapampangans who were in control of the lower kind of...
lowland areas.
Lowland areas of Luzon.
Mm-hmm.
And the territory of Pampanga was all the way from like the edge of Bataan Nueva Ecija to Tondo.
Oh!
So the Pasig River bisected, I think, the Tagailogs, the Tagalogs, and the Kapampangans.
Oh. Because Pampang is plain.
The bank of a river.
Oh,
a river bank.
Okay.
So there were the Tagailogs, who are the Tagalogs today, and there are the Kapampangans who lived in the Pampangs of the river. And they comprise a very wide territory.
Yes. And it just sort of like scooched over.
Yeah. No.
North.
So what happened was that when the Spanish conquered the Philippines and they started kind of defining boundaries and areas, because obviously they brought like Spanish governors and like vice governors, etc., and gave them
and parishes
territories mainly to collect taxes. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the whole point of the divisions, to better manage the flow of money. They basically took out entire chunks of Pampanga.
Yeah.
So they defined an area called it Bulacan. They defined an area called it Bataan, Nueva Ecija, Tarlac, Aurora.
Yeah.
And all of those things. And what's left is the Pampanga of today. Mm-hmm, but when we talk about Kapampangan mythology, that's the entire area, the entire peoples of that area. And that is why I think Kapampangan is the eighth most spoken language in the Philippines today. Mm-hmm. We have our own kind of kulitan, I think.
There's the baybayin, which is the more popular Filipino style of writing. And then the Kapampangan language is called kulitan, which
it's
is
written
cute.
In Kulitan.
It's a different script. Mm-hmm. But kulitan is also the word of teasing.
Yeah.
Teasing and teasing you. Magkulitan tayo.
And when you're makulit, you're
makulit. You're a smart aleck. You're a...
Cheeky.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Cheeky, but also pest.
Like one step below rambunctious. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If we had to define it.
But kulit is more of like, if I'm gonna kulit you, I'm gonna go like, hey ice, hey. Hey.
Okay.
Tegan today was like, Mommy.
Okay.
Okay.
So, prelude to the story of Sinukuan. Okay. Mm. So, there are two versions of the sun and moon story.
Ooh.
Where Sinukuan features. And if you've heard of the Tagalog myth of the sun and moon, it is very, very similar because even the name is similar.
Yes.
So I think this is one of those things where we share a lot of stories and mythologies with the Tagalog.
Mm-hmm.
Tagalogs. With the Tagalogs. The Tagalogs.
I'm okay. Two kinds of Tagalogs. I'm Batangas and Cavite.
Well, used to be just one.
Apparently. I know, exactly.
Okay. So, there are two versions. One is the Apolaki and Mayari,
yes,
which you guys might be familiar. Apolaki and Mayari are either the sons of Bathala or the son and daughter of Bathala. And they fought to be the sole ruler of the world. But in their ensuing fight, Apolaki blinded Mayari's eye. And that is why when they eventually decided to share the ruling of the world, Apolaki's rule is brighter because he's a sun, and Mayari's rule is a bit more dim because they're the day. Now, there's a very similar version, and the name of the way that the story is told is there used to be two kings that ruled the heavens. The first king is Aring Aldo Asinukuan, which is the sun, king of the sun or the day. So
Is it spelled with an H?
No, because Kapampangans
don't have H's.
We don't have H's. So Hari becomes Ari. So Aring Aldo means king day. So
okay.
Aldo means day. Asinukuan.
Mm-hmm.
And Aring Bulan, Amaliari. So Bulan means moon, mm-hmm, right?
But Sinukuan means surrendered to.
So, there are various definitions. The current modern definition based on the Tagalog means suko is surrender, mm-hmm, and sinukuan means
I surrendered to that person.
To be surrendered to, someone who has been surrendered to. But according to some sources, and we'll get into that a bit later, according to some sources, it's actually not from the Tagalog
word. Ooh, suko. Okay.
And there's a different definition of suko, which means something like the end or a conqueror or winner.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But something like at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's said that it's from the sashes and the loincloths of these two kings that rainbows were formed. So,
yay,
in Tagalog, we call the rainbow Bahaghari, which is the loincloth,
yes,
of the king. The terms here are Babat Ari and Pinang Ari. So,
okay.
Same thing,
yeah,
basically. And it said that, obviously, from the two kings, the light of the universe radiated from their eyes, right? And even their children, light radiated from their children, but because they're children, it's a bit dimmer, and those are the stars.
Yay.
Yeah? So, it said that the light of Apong Mayari is less dominant because he lost one of his eyes in a fight with Apong Sinukuan. And on the earth, and we call the earth Yatu.
Okay.
In Yatu, the earth. Apong Sinukuan lives in Bundok Alaya. So that's what that was the old name of Araya. Araya. Yeah. Alaya. And Apong Malyari lives on Pinatubo.
Oh.
Okay. And that's why there's kind of a tension. So,
and Apo in general is like God.
Apo is God or old person.
Yes.
So sometimes you would call like a lolo, a lola, like Apo.
Yeah.
So it's a respectful like those, term for an elder.
The communist leaders in the mountains are Apo something. Those are their names. But incidentally, the word Apo is APU, APO. It can also be pronounced as Apo, which means grandchild. So APO, Apo means elder or God, but also grandchild.
Depending on the pronunciation. Yeah, but I think those are, it's a different pronunciation. It's a different pronunciation. So it's probably a different
language. Because Apo is Tagalog. Yeah. Apo is Kapampangan.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck!
For people learning Tagalog.
Good luck!
So Apo was in Pinatubo. This is an important call out for me because I think it's not explicitly documented for obvious reasons, but the Zambals who live in Zambales near, so we talked about Zambales being a very mountainy area. So there are a lot of highland communities that live there. And obviously there are indigenous Aita people, right? And a lot of the mythology said that actually they were created first.
Yes.
And they mainly worship Malyari,
the
Pinatubo god. And so there's this tension because when the straight-haired brown people arrived in Pampanga, their god Sinukuan was also there. So I think that's part of the whole tension and why are these gods warring with each other. But this is one of the first instances where you feel that, obviously depending on who's telling the story, there's this idea of like, Malyari is the weaker god or the less dominant god. Sinukuan won the battle. So this dance is going to be very important later on when we get to another story. But okay, so now I think it's important to dive deep into Sinukuan. Because apparently he was such a huge part of the Kapampangan mythology. He featured as kind of pretty much one of the most dominant gods. He is kind of... in some versions, he's almost the Bathala equivalent.
Really?
That they have in
Are you warm? Do you Tagalog? Need a... You need pamaypay. What's this? My pamaypay with a map of the Philippines!
It's so nice. Okay.
Okay.
Random side part.
I noticed because you tied up your hair, you might be warm.
So, who is...
I'll go.
Okay. Who is Sinukuan? Right? So... Sinukuan is also known as Suku.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sinukuan was supposedly the first inhabitant of Pampanga.
Ooh.
So they are known as a noble, gigantic being. And there are a lot of obviously positive traits and attributes. Like pretty much...
Masipag. Matangkad. Kasi giant.
So, Suku ruled over creatures that later began to...
Suku is like as a group of people.
No, Suku is
one person.
It's one person.
Okay.
I just don't want to gender Suku. Because honestly...
It wasn't specified.
It's not specified.
Does Kapampangan have gender? No.
No.
No, right? Okay.
It's not a gendered...
language.
Obviously, we have a lot of Spanish because they kind of settled heavily in Pampanga, but no.
Okay. So they ruled
over creatures that later began to populate the region. So the first people were the black Aitas.
Yes.
And then the straight-haired brown people. So that's how the story
is. My hair is curly.
Maunat. So ang mga kulot at mga unat.
I love it!
That's how the story says. So kulot means curly, unat means straight. And that's kind of how some of the oral tradition distinguishes the two peoples.
I'm kulot.
And there was a very interesting story about how he eventually became known as Sinukuan.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, he was first, for lack of understanding the gender, we're going to call him he for now. So was this? He used to be called Suku and his name was changed to Sinukuan. And this is how it happened. So Suku's subjects were very hardworking people and they were planting big sturdy trees in the kingdom. But at one point, they got into conflict with the Taga-Ilog people, the Tagalogs. Sorry. Because remember, they were pretty much like, if you know where Tondo is now, which is in central Manila, the river that bisected it, that's what separated the Tagalogs from the Kapampangan, supposedly. So, at one point, the Tagalog people living along the bank of, this is what they called Pasig, I guess, at the time, Ilog Amaragul, which Amaragul translates to the large river. A river that is large.
Okay.
They cut down the big trees without Suku's permission.
Oh no.
So obviously the Kapampangans chased them into Suku's kingdom, and Suku ruled that, yeah, you guys were in the wrong. You need to pay for it. You need to be punished or whatever. And so the Tagalogs were so mad that they threatened to return together with their queen, Makiling.
Our queen was Makiling.
Your queen was Makiling. Oh. Makiling, remember, our second episode, we talked about Makiling, who is today known as kind of a forest nymph of Mount Makiling in Los Baños, but supposedly used to be one of the big important gods, either Dian Masalanta or, you know, a god by her own right called Makiling.
Or our queen, the Tagalog queen.
Exactly. So they were like, we're going to call our queen Makiling to fight you. So they did. So a lot of people came. They came in like lots of boats. Very fast they went down the river. And Suku's people alerted him. And so what he did was he brought with him two big rocks. And he jumped into the river. And he and his companions put up the rocks along the river. And it reversed the flow of the river. And so,
like a giant beaver.
Yes. And then the enemies were driven back.
Yes.
And Makiling graciously acknowledged defeat and surrendered to Suku.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she changed her name to, instead of Suku,
Sinukuan.
Ikaw ang Sinukuan. Oh. Someone surrendered to you.
Yes.
And I guess that's why.
That's a Tagalog. The Tagalog lens.
Yeah.
That's a Tagalog lens.
Definition of
Yeah.
So in other stories, Sinukuan and Makiling actually married. Or okay. They had children. And
ultimate enemies to lovers. Ultimate enemy. We did it first. We did it.
Lovers.
Enemies to lovers.
So, they had three daughters together.
Oh my God. We're covering all the tropes.
These are the names of the daughters. Okay. You have to get ready for the gender stereotype. Okay. Spread your heart.
God.
The first girl.
I'm gonna be mad.
The first girl is called Malagu, which means beautiful.
Malagors, isn't it? Doesn't it also mean like malago, like hair? Like,
no, that's a Tagalog definition.
Oh, okay.
And it's not Malago. It's Malagu.
Okay.
Mahinhin, which means modest.
Modest ba? Or like delicate, like ladylike?
Yeah, delicate, modest.
Yeah.
And matimtiman, which is...
timid.
But it also means charming, supposedly.
Maybe in Kapampangan.
Yeah. And they all married mortal men. Are you ready for their names?
Cool.
The first one is called... The person who married Malago, beautiful, is called Masikan, strong.
Yes.
The second one who married Mahinhin, which means modest, is called Matapang.
Brave.
Brave. And then the third one who married Matintiman, which is charming, is called Masipag.
Masipag.
Industrious. So we'll add this to our M's. Malakas.
Malakas.
Matapang. Masipag.
So these were the desirable qualities in a man, and the desirable qualities in the woman was timid, modest, charming.
I read the paper of this scholar. Her name is Julieta Maliari. So she's the one who kind of recounts all of these. She does it in the context of analyzing what the legends say about the Kapampangan psyche.
Okay.
And obviously, you kind of try to put as many of the ideal traits into Sinukuan himself, and obviously Makiling, because they're like the mother and father figure. But then these are also the desired traits, like the masipag, malagu, etc. They're the desired traits in men and women. And the way she says it is like, these traits are considered the final phase of the evolution.
Ganon!
But anyway.
Like a Pokemon? Like, when you level up as a Pokemon, I'll be timid.
Yeah.
Timid, charming, and maganda. Excuse me.
Okay.
Ayoko na mag-evolve, guys.
Okay.
revolution.
Obviously, these are the ideal traits in, like, a very old agricultural perspective of the world, right?
But I, all, you know, I kind of feel bad because, like, I mean, kahit ba naman sa Pilipinas, even in the Philippines, and this is pre-colonial, that these were the qualities that one would really, you know, I mean,
but then again, the only thing that I don't know about this part of the legend is, because we'll get into a bit more analysis that I found in further research. This looks to me like a Christianized
version.
I'll take of that. The tale.
I'll accept
because
that.
Because when I looked at descriptions of suku or sinukuan, it almost feels like Old Testament God, New Testament God.
Oh.
Like older versions of him were scary, angry. I have moody, the book here.
Throwing rocks.
So shout out to Jordan Clark. This is the Diccionario Mitologica de Filipinas. And I was looking for mentions of sinukuan. Obviously, there's a very, very short mention. But suku is a demon of the early Kapampangans. Even today, peasants believe that the demon suku still resides in Mount Arayan.
Really?
Or Mount Sinukuan. Older versions of him are scary. You know, he wanted sacrifices from people. He punished people. Those were the emphasis. And then later versions is when he started being more benevolent and stuff like that. So it could also be kind of, I guess,
Christianization.
Yeah, or like a bit more of a tempering down of these stories kind of create ideal qualities. I don't know. Again, your conjecture. Because I wasn't able to trace when this story surfaced. Okay. Now let's talk about Sinukuan versus Malyari.
Okay.
The big epic feud. So this is not enemies to lovers, unfortunately. So this is how they fought. This is what happened. One day, there was a locust infestation in the kingdom of Makili.
There were locusts in a
Makili. This is in Bulacan.
You know what Tagalog for a locust infestation is?
What?
Kuyog.
Oh. Interesting.
I learned it through Trece. She cast a spell and she cast, like, it was very cool. She had, this is not a spoiler, but she has her dagger, her magic dagger, and she had a gun. Mm-hmm. And Lito Lapid style put the gun thing muzzle into the dagger. And then she invoked the spell Kuyog. And then when she fired the bullet, metal locusts or wasps.
I love it.
Or like swarm. Sorry, swarm. It's Kuyog is swarm, not locust. Swarm. Then they came and they attacked the enemy. But Kuyog. Because Kuyog is, the current context of Kuyog is like, if there's like a concert pre-sale of tickets and then a crowd goes.
Mob.
A mob. Kinukuyog. So it's being swarmed. So
I've never heard that word before.
You never heard Kuyog?
No, I've never used it. I've never heard
You're not Tagalog. Kasi it's a Tagalog.
Not Tagalog. Clearly.
Tagalog. Okay,
go. All right. So there was a
swarm. A kuyog.
A locust infestation in Makiling's kingdom. Now, Malyari, apparently they're friends. Okay. Malyari, the king of Mount Pinatubo, was Makiling's friend. And so he wanted to help.
Okay.
So what he did was, he caused heavy rains to fall. However, the rain wasn't enough to get rid of all the locusts. Instead, they were driven by a strong wind to the mountain of Sinukuan.
Oh no!
Guys. And to drive the insects away, Sinukuan told one of his followers to blow them away towards the west. Yeah, so for perspective, Sinukuan, Mount Arayat, sorry, I'm calling it Sinukuan now. Mount Arayat is in like eastern side. Uh-huh. And what's in the west? Mount Pinatubo.
Yes.
So when that happened, the locust ended up in Malyari's kingdom.
Oh no, so he's just trying to help.
Malyari got so mad. So this led to a big fight between the two immortal kings, Malyari and Sinukuan. So Malyari hurled a huge rock, so many rocks being thrown in these stories, which hit and chipped off the peak of Sinukuan's mountain. That's why the summit is broken. And because Sinukuan was so angry, so anger management issues, he started throwing rocks nonstop at Malyari's mountain. And that's why it turned into a very, very rugged mountain.
similar to the earlier giant story.
Yeah, let me show you what Pinatubo looks like. And a lot of hikers love going to Pinatubo.
No, because in the 90s, my dad was assigned as the base commander in Tarlac. And we actually rode a helicopter to look over the whole Pinatubo mountain ranges. In 94 or 95.
So it was just after,
yeah. There was lahar everywhere. Like,
sad.
The house that my dad was living in Tarlac, was actually unlivable because there was lahar in there. And so we had to live in the newly constructed barracks. Wow. And then I had to do Santa Cruzan.
You were telling me we were living there.
Yeah. I had to do, oh my God, when you were a baby, I did Santa Cruzan. I was a reina in the Santa Cruzan, and the road was really like my dress became gray from the lahar.
Yes. So when Pinatubo erupted, my uncles, and my aunt and uncle were in our house in Bacolor, when it happened, and they had pictures. They took pictures of themselves. They had umbrellas, and it was raining ash.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell the rest of the stories later. Let me show you what Pinatubo looks like. It's actually pretty in a very scary way. In a very Mordor.
It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's very Mordor.
In a very Mordor way.
Yeah.
And it hadn't...
Didn't you come with us when we did the hike?
No, I wasn't there. It hadn't exploded. It hadn't erupted in a long time.
And the water in the lake...
And it looks pretty now. So there are pictures now where it's like a bit more green. Again, we'll post clearer versions of the pictures, but it looks so much prettier now. They do so many hikes there.
Yeah. And then there's a spa
where
you can get covered in like with mud that has sulfur in it and sperm.
I wonder if that's like...
I didn't do really it. I don't know. I don't know if it's safe.
Okay. Now, the fight wasn't over.
Okay.
There was one last object that Sinuhuan hurled, and it was this huge grinder. So, you know, those traditional, like...
Coffee grinder?
No, grinder for the palay. For the rice grinder.
There's a rice grinder? Because we dik-dik.
It says grinder.
Baka it's more high-tech because it's the rice
bowl. It's a grinder made of solid gold. Wow. It wasn't just a huge grinder. It's also made of...
Okay.
Anyway, the result was the most destructive eruption.
Of
Malyarbis Mountain. Blinding lightning, deafening thunder, terrifying fire explosions. And then they say that through the destruction, they heard an echoing voice of derision and bitterness. And it was Malyari. And he said, "From now on, my name is no longer Malyari, but Punsalang, the chief Punsalang of all of your enemies." And the resulting eruption destroyed the Kapampangan region. There were reports, I don't know, I wasn't able to find an accurate source for it, but there were reports that said that the eruption happened on June 16th, 1991.
Mm-hmm.
There were reports that said that on noon of June 15th, 1991, people saw an apparition of Sinuhuan.
Oh.
In Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know whether apparition meant someone actually saw Sinuhuan like at the mountain summit or whatever, or they just saw
clouds.
It was noon, it was the sun, an eclipse, yeah, or something like that. But it said that they saw him, and part of the legend also says that Sinuhuan ordered one of his men, Apong Galura, who's in charge of Typhoon, to help the Kapampangans.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that links with the explanation of why the lahar happened. Like, was it Sinuhuan trying to help and get rid of all of the smoke and fire?
Yeah.
And it resulted in the lahar. Yeah. He didn't realize the consequence of his actions something.
Because when Pinatubo exploded, it was massive, right? Because it was a giant volcano. When Pinatubo exploded, it lowered the Earth's temperature by 2 degrees for weeks and weeks. It was like a solar eclipse for a couple of days in Manila. We were in Manila and it was like night.
Yeah, the entire, like a huge chunk of like the Luzon area was covered in like darkness. Yeah.
Inches and inches of ash.
Yeah, and inches ash kept falling from the sky. Similar to, remember there was an eruption scare with Taal.
Taal, yeah.
Very recently.
Right before COVID. My parents.
2 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. Before COVID. It was in January, right after COVID. And my parents' house is right next to Taal. Maybe we'll do Taal next.
Mm.
But Taal was very small and it was very limited. But Pinatubo was like almost the entirety of Luzon.
Yeah. This links back a little bit to the Aitas because remember, the ancestral origin of the Aitas, they traced their roots back to Pinatubo and their god Malyari, right? And they've always been afraid of Malyari, like if you look at their mythology. And, they, you know, a lot of the records of Malyari are linked with the pag-anitos to him, offerings and sacrifices that were made to him. And
I'm going to ask you a question that Brian asked me.
Mm.
If it was an active volcano, why did people live too close to it? And my hypothesis was it's good for the plants.
It had been inactive for 5 centuries.
Pinatubo?
Yes.
Oh.
It had been inactive for 5 centuries.
Wow.
And then it happened.
Wow. Okay.
Now we talk a little bit about the eruption and what happened. I'm going to read like some passages of what happened. If this is triggering for you, maybe.
Volcano trigger.
Yeah. Natural disasters and stuff like that, maybe like skip ahead. So, as it says here, Pinatubo had been inactive for 5 centuries beforehand. But on April of 1991, it started having stirrings, right? So they had some early warnings.
Yes.
And then on June 7th, 1991, eruptions began, but the major blast happened on the 15th of June.
Yes.
And people who were there, people who witnessed it, said that it resembled like a nuclear detonation.
Yes.
Right? So it was like a giant mushroom of ashes and steam rising from the crater of the volcano and literally taking over the entire atmosphere of central Luzon, which is, as we said, a huge area. Right? And then hours later, a typhoon entered the area.
Yep.
And that's why the whole myth of did sinukuan send like Galura over, etc. While the volcano kept ejecting blasts of rock, sand, ashes, right? And that's why the Aitas believed that the wrath of their god was, you know, he was cursing the people of Pampanga.
Yes,
that's
yes.
what they believe.
That's what Mangjani always used to say. He's like,
really?
Yeah, he's like, he doesn't say when the volcano erupted. He says, nung nagalit.
Nung nagalit. Yeah, when
nung
he
nagalit
got mad.
Si Apo Malyari. Mm. Galit kasi si Apo Malyari. And every time, and for years there were like aftershocks. For years there were aftershocks and he would say, oh, galit na naman siya.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's true because here it says what happened. So, buildings collapsed because obviously there were billions of cubic meters of sand and ashes, right? That were released by the perfect volcano. And as we said earlier, when rain combines with ash, it just turns into this really scary flood of lahar.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember what my family used to tell me because I was too young to really kind of recognize and understand what happened. But basically imagine this, right? The place where you're living. Imagine the street that you're living in now. And one day, a flood that is sludgy mud, right?
It's so not a water flood.
You can't break, like, you know, it's you can't swim. Once you're caught in it, that's it. You're gone. It washes all the cars of the street away, right? It rises so high, it covers the entire first floor of any building that exists. It keeps rising higher until everyone to try to escape was literally sitting on the roofs of their houses.
Yep.
And if you didn't prepare and you didn't have food, people were drinking rainwater.
Yeah.
And they were all waiting for helicopters to come and save them. And when I was younger, because I grew up in Pampanga.
Were you there when it happened?
No, luckily I was in Manila during the major flood. But apparently when I was younger, my Lola keeps telling me this story, but I only have very... I don't know if I've created the memory because she told me the story so much or I actually remember it, but I think it was 95 or 94. I was still very young, 5, 6 years old or something. Or even younger, 93. Mm-hmm. Anyway, apparently like there was another major flood.
Yes.
And we had to get out of our house. Our house had been elevated by that point several times because that's what you do. You just have very long foundations, keep elevating it.
Yes.
And
then sometimes your roof is so short.
And so there was major floods happening. And my Lola and my Lolo were the only ones who were with me. I was with them. And my Lola was like, okay, we're gonna go to our neighbor's house because their house is higher. More elevated. So she needed to get some stuff inside the house. We went to the street and she's like, shit, I have to get something from inside the house. And there's a banana tree in front. Uh-huh. And she said, hold on to this banana tree. Don't let go.
Oh, no.
So I was holding on to the banana tree while there was flood, like, raging all around me. That's what she said. And then eventually we went to the house.
Yeah.
And the day after, I think it was still the last vestiges of Lahar. Because when the rain finally subsided and we went out of the house, it was a huge sludge of mud that you had to go to go back. And I remember that we used to have like a flight of stairs that was like, you have the ground floor and then like a short
landing
and then up. And then when we went back, it was like two steps past the landing.
Wow.
And then we had to like...
Could you walk on top of the Lahar?
No, your feet would sink. So it's it's like kind of quicksand in a way. And I remember, so this links back to what you were saying. It ruined the rice fields.
Yeah.
Because it's so non-porous. Yeah. It's ashes.
Yeah.
Right? It's like refined cement.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't dry fast enough because there's no way for the air to, the escape. Water to escape, yeah. Right? So what would happen is even years later after the Lahar, I would be walking, running around, playing at the back of the house in my wellies because otherwise my feet would sink into the mud. And it was years and years after. Because
there'd still be like pockets of water underneath. Yeah, that like a sinkhole. Yeah.
But yeah, so Pampanga used to produce so much rice for the region. Completely gone.
Yeah.
Bacolor, which is where I grew up, where we stayed, was right at the path of the Lahar and of the ash. So there were entire villages that were
I remember driving wiped out. Before when my dad was assigned in Tarlac, we would drive through the Lahar. It was like a desert. It was like just dunes. But then you'd see the occasional, like, the top of a church or, like, the top of a school. And it was gray. Everything was just very gray.
So this is what happened to one of my friends. So when I was younger, I grew up in Bacolor with my grandfather and grandmother. And I used to go to my Lolo's office all the time. Like, when, you know, I didn't really go to school yet, I think, at the time, or when school was out. He would bring me to his office. He worked in the municipio, in the municipal office. And this is after the Lahar. He was in charge of the resettlements. So moving people and, you know, development, how to bring people back and stuff like that. And obviously, like, you know, what's a kid going to do in, like, a municipal office? I had nothing to do. So he would ask his, like,
typewriter.
Oh, I messed up his typewriter.
Oh, no.
So he had a typewriter.
There's a ribbon.
You couldn't, like...
Backspace.
There was no backspace, right? So there was a white out.
Yeah.
Which is basically like...
It's like tape.
It's like nail polish. Yeah. No, there wasn't tape yet.
Oh, no. It was the liquid white out.
White out. There was no... It was like nail polish. Think about it as nail polish or white paint. And you would, like, paint it on top of what you typed, wait for it to dry, and then type over. And I was, like, playing around with it. And there were just, like, random papers in his desk.
Oh, no.
And I was just random.
No, it was documents.
So, he saw me. He came back from a meeting. And then he saw what I was doing. And my grandpa loves me so much. He didn't get mad at me. But he was just like, maybe you should go out. So, he called over, like, his two secretaries. And two young people were working for him. And they're like, oh, maybe just take her out, buy her candies or whatever. So we went to the palengke.
Not candy.
We bought candies. And then we rode the kalesa.
Yay!
So there in Pampanga, when I was younger, instead of like the tricycles or the pedicabs, which is public transport, our public transport was kalesa.
Which is a horse-drawn cart.
Like, think a tuk-tuk, but like...
A horse!
But a horse.
There's a song. Kalesa ay pambayang sasakyan.
Yeah. And when you'd go to San Fernando in the palengke, they still had kalesas and that's how you went around.
Maginhaw at di paalinsangan.
I don't know that song.
And there's a dance.
So anyway, I'm getting distracted from my story.
Where the dancers make a form of a kalesa. It's very cool.
Okay. So anyway, look, the point of my story is kind of sad. So one of the secretaries, the person who used to take me around, she was on the roof of her house.
Oh no!
During the lahar,
mm-hmm.
and she slipped.
Oh no!
In the middle of the flood,
oh,
and
no.
she fell.
That's so scary.
The thing, and so
they
she
never
was,
found her body.
I don't know if they did, but she didn't survive.
Oh no!
Yeah, and it just.
It was the secondary lahar na.
Yeah, that's the secondary ones na. Like, the ones a few years after the eruption. And so many images of my childhood that I kind of knew were devastating, but I didn't understand the gravity of how bad it was. Like, I remember, I would walk around and there would be talahib, like, weeds mm-hmm. everywhere. I used to make, like, wishes on, you know, you can make wishes
like
on.
Yeah, like a dandelion.
Yeah, it's like a dandelion, for example. And then they say, oh, you should release the seed into the air and make a wish and stuff like that. And I never wondered why
those
were the only things that grew.
Oh, because nothing else can
and
grow.
Years and years. And I would play in abandoned houses.
Oh my gosh.
I would play in the basements of abandoned houses, and I didn't realize that the basements were the actual rooms, the former homes of people. We lost so much of our antiques, our artifacts, you know, mga pamana.
Yeah.
Because it just, they're just flooded. They were covered. They're buried.
Yeah, they're
under
buried.
Under the sand.
There's no
even today, if you go around, I remember I would go around and there would be houses that no one lived in. And it was just like the top edge of the roof.
Yep.
That's left behind. Now, if you go to Bacolor now, there's been a lot of development. So you don't really see a lot of that. But every now and then you would see like
an empty lot.
An empty lot that just has the bathroom, like a
concrete
crumbled piece of like the remaining walls of the bathroom. But yeah, so
is Bacolor now did they make build on top na lang?
So
or did they clear out some of it?
Some of them they cleared out some of it when they built, but yeah, you're building on top basically. There's some stuff there that's just there. It took years for the public market to come back, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Everything was like, so there's a place called Bulaon, and that's where a lot of the people from Bacolor eventually resettled. It's only now that everyone's coming back.
Yeah.
And I think it's extra sad because Bacolor as a province, as a town,
it was
in Pampanga,
super
is very
poppin'.
Developed at the time. It was, I think, applying to become a city.
Oh,
so San Fernando was the capital, it's a new city, and I think it was developing so much enough, like one of the main trade schools are there and stuff like that. So they were planning to be a city. I think in a few years it would have been.
No, it's a big deal. The town where my parents live now, Tanawan, in Batangas, used to be a town, and then when it became a city, the amount of infrastructure and investment that came in, hospitals, schools. The municipio is like super high tech. Is just next level for the whole community.
Bacolor has one of the oldest churches, I think, the San Guillermo Parish, and that's where I went for like kinder, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah, that church was buried. So apparently, it used to be so much tall, like as tall as a big cathedral, I guess, or something, big church. But I mean, the main ceiling, which used to be like very high, is maybe as high as the ceiling, a bit higher. They're painted frescoes of like the gospels and stuff like that. And they called, apparently Bacolor was once called the Athens of Pampanga, and at one point in the Revolutionary War, when the Spanish had to flee Manila, they made Bacolor their capital or something. And a lot of the region's called the Athens of Pampanga, or the Athens of the Philippines, I don't know, is I think a lot of the poets and writers live there.
Yeah.
So anyway, point is, there's so much history and you know, progress that is basically erased in the span of just a few years.
Yeah, handful of years. Are you gonna cover the part of like the theory of why Malyari exploded, why Pinatubo exploded, like the pop culture theory?
What's a pop culture
theory? About the U.S. bases.
In no.
So,
no, what's that?
Around that time, well, you were very young.
Okay.
I was 11.
There's pop culture theory.
I was 11, yeah. There's pop culture theory. So, around that time, there was a Basis Renewal Act. Mm-hmm. So, when the U.S. bases opened in the Philippines, they have sort of a contract for a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And there were two major bases near Pampanga. There was Olongapo. There was Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Subic and Clark, sorry. Subic was in Olongapo and Clark was in Clark Air Base, Tarlac. So, near Tarlac.
Clark, Pampanga.
Clark Angeles. Was Pampanga? Angeles City. Pampanga. So, those are the two big bases. So, after, and there were other bases before, Sangley Naval Base, where I was born on an American base, and there were bases in Cebu, blah, blah, blah. After certain decades passed, those bases were closed down already because, you know, there was no major war in the Pacific Theater, which is what they call the Pacific Theater. The wars were in the Middle East and stuff. So it didn't really make sense to have a lot of bases here in the Philippines. But it still made sense because there was still Taiwan. China is still a thing. Korea, maybe. So it's still important to keep a few bases. But there were also bases in Guam. There were bases in Hawaii, in Japan.
She's talking about in the context of the U.S.
Yes, yeah. U.S. bases.
U.S. strategy.
So now there was... the Basis Act was up for renewal. And there were... It was like a whole election thing, right? Yeah. So there were like senators for, senators against. And it was like there were marches and things like that. And many people wanted the Americans out. Because they perceived it to be, you know, the towns where they were at were very immoral, very a lot of
the red depravity. Light district in Pampanga is near the U.S. Naval Base.
Yes. Anyway. There's a place called Sasmoan, which is Sex Moon. The Americans named the town. Yeah.
You know, there's a place called Target Pampanga.
Yes,
and it's because the U.S. base would do their target practice directed at that place. And it's the place where people live.
Yes.
When we went there, there were like, obviously the indigenous community lives there. You would find random shells.
Yeah.
Bullets.
Unexploded shells. So it's very dangerous. So the theory was. And then, so that was the conversation happening on. And then the volcano exploded. And then for a long time, the U.S. bases were like, no, we can salvage it. But so many things were unsalvageable. Airplanes, machinery, towers, housing, cars, trucks, everything, ammunition. Everything was like unsalvageable. And so the theory was then the ITAS prayed and offered to Apo Malyari and said, can you send the Americans out? And that was his answer. And then, unfortunately, because he was, you know, out of practice, everyone was affected. And true enough, the bases closed down. Now those bases exist as Philippine military bases. But things were just not salvaged anymore. It's unsalvageable. And the U.S. presence left the Philippines in the 90s. And then later on in the 2000s, my dad was base commander for one of those bases.
Well, that's what happens when you bring a cannon to a knife fight. Like you're not going to be able to control. Like if you're trying to invoke the power of
the god,
this huge god, you won't be able to control the effects of you know.
But I mean,
the other part of the story is going back to the whole, you know, the Zambals, the Aitas were told that their god was a lesser god. I think it's, you know, it's an affirmation for them that our god is still powerful.
Yeah.
You know, like even Sinukuan, who supposedly is all powerful, was not able to save his Kapampangan people.
Nope.
Yeah. I think we have to close out.
Okay.
Part one here.
Yes, because we're like at 1 hour and 14 minutes.
I really thought I was going to be able to finish it in one episode. Famous last words, as always. So, that was the story of Sinukuan and the ensuing fight that led to the eruption of the Pinatubo and the havoc that it caused to the Kapampangan people. In the next episode, we're going to talk a bit more about who is Sinukuan and we tried to trace the oral tradition and even history.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know of him? As well as, who are the other gods in the Kapampangan pantheon? right?
Ooh. And was there a god of rice husks?
Anyway, guys, we hope you enjoyed that episode. You know, as I said, I grew up in Pampanga, but I was very young when a lot of these things happened. If any of you have any like good, interesting stories or information to share about that time, I would love to hear it personally. And let us know what you think about these theories. Like, I think this is one of the few incidents where a major event that happened in history is linked with a very current myth tied to it as well. Because a lot of times, the myths and legends we talk about feature historical events that happened in the far future.
Mm-hmm.
But this is still very, very relatively near future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what you guys think about that. We hope you enjoyed that episode. Welcome to 2023. This is the first episode we're recording in 2023. And we'll see you in part two. Where can they find us, Anima?
You can find us on thegodsmustbecrazy.pod on Instagram. And also listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you pod. But also now on YouTube.
If you guys have Spotify or Apple Podcasts, it would be great if you could help leave us a review.
Or a rating. 5 stars.
Yeah.
Or four and a half stars.
There's no 4.5. Eh. 5 and a half.
Only 5 and a half.
Let's round it up. No, so a bunch of you have been very, very nice and gave us 5-star ratings, number one. Number two, we got some really, really nice messages. And I think we're probably going to read and share a few of them in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be featured, feel free to leave us
a voicemail on Anchor or even a voice message on Instagram. We can receive those too. So,
and we love hearing from you guys. So just feel free to message us over on Instagram.
Hooray!
Bye again.